Good evening. In the news tonight, the ongoing battle in the Finger Lakes District over energy companies who want to use salt mines for storing fracked gas. An audit by New York City's comptroller shows that the city's accessoride service is a disaster. And the NYCLU announces a settlement agreement which protects immigrant students' rights to equal educational opportunities. With these and other stories in New York, I'm Linda Perry, and this is some of the news for Thursday, May 19th, 2016. Today, the NYCLU and Legal Services of Central New York announced a settlement with the Utica School District and the Refugee Center in Utica. Utica is in the Mohawk Valley upstate. It resolves a year-long case which alleged that the school district had been excluding refugees and immigrants age 17 to 20 years old from the only high school in Utica, New York, and it has implications for schools throughout New York State. Phil DeGrange is an attorney with the New York Civil Liberties Union.
As part of our investigation, we learned that for years, the school district had been denying refugees and immigrants the right to even choose to go to high school, and that it was this kind of commonly known secret within the refugee community that once you turned 17 and over, you were barred from going to high school. And so this misunderstanding of the law, of course, these are refugees and immigrants who are not well versed in New York law or even American law when they come into this country leaving war torn or impoverished backgrounds. If they're told that once you turn 17 you can't go to high school, they believe that.
And can you tell us about the lead plaintiff? I understand he was born in a refugee camp in Rwanda.
Yes, Patrick Tuyuzere was born in a refugee camp in Rwanda, he's from the Democratic Republic of the Congo. I'm sure your listeners are well aware of the long history of war, unfortunately, in the Congo, that has been plaguing that country for years. And so Patrick was in Rwanda and in refugee camps, and was thankfully able to come to the United States with his family at 17 years old, and he thought coming into the United States, he'd be able to achieve that American dream that he's heard so much about when he was abroad in Rwanda and in a refugee camp in Rwanda. But unfortunately, when he arrived here in Utica, he was told that he could not go to high school, that he was too old at 17 to attend high school, and they instead told him that he had to go to a GED program. And, Patrick came to this country initially hoping to become a doctor. And then, in that moment, being told that he couldn't go to high school, his dreams just seemed to dissipate right then and there. But thankfully, we were able to get in contact with Patrick, and we heard his story. And we brought this lawsuit not only on his behalf, but on the behalf of five other plaintiffs who had a similar experience of coming to Utica, of asking and seeking entry into high school, but being turned away from the school's doors and told that they did not qualify because they were too old, when in fact that was completely against the law.
And finally, this settlement has implications for districts other than Utica, is that correct?
Yes, and I believe a week or two ago, the AP reported that about 35 school districts in 14 states had been denying Central Americans and other migrants access to school, and essentially funneling them to these alternative education programs, these GEDs or English language only programs. So this situation of school districts turning down and creating barriers for enrollment is not unique to Utica. It's happening, unfortunately, all throughout the country. And so this consent decree, putting in place, steps, the procedures in place that will put in checks against the school district to make sure that any kid who enrolls in an alternative education program from now on will do so knowingly and will, do so giving his or her full consent, is going to be, I believe, important for other school districts to look at and follow and emulate. And not only, must that, kid make that, knowing decision before he enrolls or she enrolls in a GED program, but every year the school district has the obligation to follow up with that student who's enrolled in a GED program and again advise them that they continue to have the right to go to high school. And then that student would then have to opt out of transferring to high school. So it's, this continuing obligation on the school district to advise these kids of their right to go to high school. Because again, for years, these kids were under the misimpression that they had no right to go to high school.
That's perfect.
And that misimpression came because of the school district, you know, telling them that that once you reach a certain age, you know, the school doors were barred.
Mm-hmm. And also, what about the implications for college? Doesn't this increase the chances for someone to attend a college of their choice?
Of course. Having a high school diploma only makes you more competitive to be able to go to, you know, the college of your desire. And, you know, I mentioned the story of Patrick, who came to the United States initially to become a doctor. He now wants to be an engineer. You know, having only English language instruction, of course, would not prepare you to be able to, you know, pursue your path of becoming an engineer. Another one of our plaintiffs, Booty, you know, she wants to be a doctor because her grandparents have, you know, for years suffered from disabilities. And when she was told that she couldn't go to high school, you know, those dreams were almost crushed. But now, because she can get a high school diploma, she'll be competitive and be able to go to the college that she's able to you know, earn her way into. You know, all these kids want is an opportunity to be able to earn their way into the college of their dreams and into the medical school or graduate school of their dreams to be able to pursue their life ambition. And unfortunately, you know, the school district had in the past denied them that ability, denied them their dream, denied them their right to their American dream when they came here. So now, because they will be able to go to high school and will be able to get their high school diploma, these kids will be able to fulfill their dreams of not only going to college, but also becoming whatever they want to be.
Phil DeGrange is an attorney with the New York Civil Liberties Union. Utica has seen a large influx of immigrants from many countries in recent years. About 18% of Utica's 60,000 residents were born outside of the U.S., and more than 25% speak a language other than English at home. In other news, Republican members of Congress are accusing New York's Attorney General Eric Schneiderman and his Democratic counterparts in 16 other jurisdictions of chilling free speech over climate change. This through their legal and political campaign to curb fossil fuel burning. 13 members of the House Committee on Science, Space, and Technology say they've been pushed by environmental activists to use their prosecutorial powers to stifle scientific discourse. Letters were sent to all 17 attorneys general, who announced their coordinated effort March 29th. Schneiderman and some others are investigating whether ExxonMobil has misled the public and investors about global warming from burning oil and other fuels. A Schneiderman spokesperson says the letter appears to be part of a media campaign funded by the fossil fuel industry. This week, New Yorkers from upstate and downstate gathered to demonstrate outside of Con Ed, the New York City headquarters for Con Edison, this during a shareholders meeting. Con Edison's board of directors met to discuss their recently announced joint venture with Crestwood Midstream, a Houston, Texas-based energy company. The deal is valued at nearly $1 billion, a storage project that will hold shale gas from Pennsylvania and store it in salt caverns underneath Seneca Lake. Upstate. These salt caverns were permitted for use by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC. This for storage facilities for liquefied petroleum gases such as propane and butane. This joint venture has sparked outrage among residents of the Finger Lakes region. Zach Murphy reports.
The Finger Lakes sits directly on top of the Marcellus Rock, a shale formation that holds plentiful amounts of natural gas. The only way to extract the natural gas is through hydraulic fracturing, or fracking. Energy companies are targeting the Finger Lakes for natural gas transport and storage permits. They want to use the salt caverns beneath Seneca Lake to store the natural gas. In northeastern Pennsylvania, natural gas companies already have drilling permits. But in New York State, regulatory agencies are being more cautious in awarding permits for transport and permits for storage. William Oweleen from the Finger Lakes Wine Business Coalition is opposed to the use of salt caverns for storage.
Salt caverns represent only 7% of the underground storage solutions in America for fracked gas. However, they're accountable for 100% of the accidents since 1972.
Oweleen sees the nearly $1 billion investment that Con Edison has made in Crestwood Midstream as not only risky to the residents of the region, but also risky to Con Edison's shareholders due to Crestwood's recent history of industrial storage accidents in other states. But above all else, he says that this massive investment in expanding natural gas storage underneath Seneca Lake poses serious geological and economic risks to the region.
This is a patently unsafe project that Con Edison willingly or unwillingly is becoming a part of. They've decided to invest nearly $1 billion in Crestwood Midstream to take them off the financial ropes and help them to expand frac gas stored underground. These salt caverns are seismically active. They're unstable. A 400,000-ton rock had fallen from one of the cavern roofs. Crestwood denies that that is knowledge that they contain. So the people of the Finger Lakes have traveled to Manhattan to alert our friends, our fellow New Yorkers. This is a deal they should not be conned by.
We are Seneca Lake and Gas Free Seneca, two local organizations in central New York, are very concerned about the risk profile of investing in fracked gas infrastructure, which is both pipelines and storage.
Con Edison shareholder James Dennis drew the ire of Con Edison CEO John McAvoy at the shareholders meeting for raising concerns.
In particular, I mentioned gas storage at Seneca Lake, which is in old salt caverns, which were never designed for storage. Some of them have been converted to gas storage. And we don't know if it's actually leaking, but we do know there's a history of ceiling collapses. And a previous company that stored propane there picked up and left in 1984. We think the reasons they did that was the structural instability of the salt formations. The Himrod salt mine, 12 miles to the north, closed down after 4 years. They had ceiling collapses. One of their employees was killed. So there's a history of unstable salt formation in this part of New York.
Dennis says Con Edison is potentially entering a legal gray area by entering into a partnership with Crestwood Midstream.
After deregulation, it's actually not legal for a supplier, you know, a distributor of energy in New York State to own, to be a producer. So it's my understanding that Con Ed does not own any energy production facilities, and that it could be that they are on legally sort of in a gray area by owning gas storage facilities because, you know, gas storage is often right next to the production wells and that sort of thing. But so I think probably the answer is they aren't physically invested in natural gas production, but by putting $1 billion into transportation of fracked gas from Pennsylvania, you know, they are investing in the fossil fuel industry, which is clearly, you know, Hurricane Sandy was a clear indication that New York City in particular is very, very vulnerable to climate change. One of the things I mentioned in my 8 minutes was that never once did I hear Mr. McAvoy use or refer to climate change. It's not on his radar yet, and it needs to be.
Even though hydraulic fracking was banned in January 2015 by the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, the federal government has jurisdiction over energy pipeline storage and transportation infrastructure, not the states. Activist and Emmy Award-winning actor James Cromwell emphasized that proposed projects by natural gas companies to obtain licenses in New York State are all connected. He says that the supply chain of storing fracked gas from Pennsylvania fit within a bigger web of corporations and states partnering to sell fracked gas on the international market, where the profits from shale gas are much higher than here at home.
The project poses the same danger as all the projects, hydrofracking projects, pose to the communities that they're located in, because the gas is inherently dangerous. It is not safe. It is not good for people's health. And it is ubiquitous because it's not only, it arises out of the fracking fields in Pennsylvania, but there is leakage and there is potential danger and risk over the entire process, sending the gas through the pipelines and the metering stations and the compressor stations to the power plants. Now, the interesting thing is the storage area in Seneca Lake is to hold the gas that they need to supply the CPV power plant where I live in Orange County in Wayweyanda. And so all of these projects are connected. The idea, of course, is to get fracked gas up to Canada where it can be liquefied and sent abroad where they can get 6 times the amount for it that they get on the local market. But they couldn't sell that to the people of New York any more than they can sell this to the people of America. So they say it's about power independence, but it's not power independence. Just like the oil that would have come down from the tar sands region through the middle of America to a refinery in Texas, the products, the end products, were going to be sold on the international market. So we take all the risk and we get none of the benefit.
Cromwell, who is a resident in Orange County, believes that the decisions to award state and federal permits to frack, store, and transport shale gas are all linked to the greater issue of climate change. Zach Murphy, WBAI News, New York.
In other news, more than 31,492 AccessoRide customers were stranded in 2015. This is according to New York City Comptroller Scott Stringer.
AccessoRide is an affront to all New Yorkers.
Stringer released an audit of the service, which shows that 2.5 million pickup and drop-off times may have been manipulated, this to show more favorable performance.
This is a lifeline to family, to work, to daily activities that allow people with disabilities and our seniors to have full productive lives. Failure is not an option. When you strand somebody in the middle of the day with no hope to get home, you not only put that person's safety in jeopardy, but you disrupt the life of an individual. We must get this program under control.
In 2015, more than 31,000 bookings for AccessoRide went wrong. Either the vehicles didn't show up, they failed to provide service, or stranded thousands of New Yorkers. These are people with disabilities, seniors, or others who are unable to take mass transit. WBAI listeners like Barbara from Harlem.
They send private cars to pick up the riders, and the riders are not aware of what type of car it is. They have to approach the car. Instead of it having AccessoRide on it, it has nothing. It's dark, and the windows are basically shaded. And they, in many instances, are very intimidating and angry because apparently they really don't want to come into Harlem to pick up the AccessoRiders who need the ride. Now, normally they would have the white and blue van or the white and blue car. On one instance or more, at least two or three instances, I missed a ride to get to the mega bus. And when I called, upset, and people could have a stroke or what have you because they're upset and they already have anxiety of trying to get themselves together to take a trip wherever they have to go to doctors or whatever. And when the AccessoRide never showed, I was told to take a cab. Well, who's to say that we have cab money to go all the way down to 34th Street and 12th Avenue?
No, that shouldn't have been. Now you're talking about AccessoRide, which is like the MTA.
That's right.
Operates AccessoRide, right? That's a city thing. Like they're supposed to come and pick you up.
Well, there. Let me say this.
And it's supposed to be door to door.
That's right. But let me say this. I missed the ride because my stepdaughter was down there and she was waiting for me, and the ride never came. So I had to catch a cab, and then they put us on the next bus. Now that's incident one.
73% of the time, AccessoRide providers reported incorrect early pickup times, or they had no GPS record to verify pickups. Less than 50% of one car services trips were on time.
I've been working for 2.5 years, but I've been taking AccessoRide for 16 years.
And I waited 5:30, 6, 6:30, almost 6:45. And I waited in an ice storm. They did not come.
Comptroller Scott Stringer.
AccessoRide providers leave people stranded. They manipulate records. They don't arrive on time. They attract floods of customer complaints, and they may even be paid when they don't even show up. The MTA looks the other way. Our audit makes a series of recommendations, including that the MTA finally ensure that all buses and cars are equipped with functioning GPS technology that can be used to evaluate performance. Direct companies to stop using self-reported pickup times except when the GPS system fails. Crack down on providers that misrepresent trip and vehicle data. In a city that prides itself on diversity, accessibility, and tolerance, AccessoRide is an affront to all New Yorkers.
For more on Stringer's AccessoRide audit, go to comptroller.nyc.gov. And that was the WBAI Evening News for Thursday, May 19, 2016. The news was produced with Zach Murphy and Reggie Johnson. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.